We've got a heck of a show planned for you this week. You're going to love hearing Caroline Stephen interview our team of trading experts so you can get the very latest market views, commentary, hints, and tips. And here is Caroline now.
Hello and welcome to the first show for 2014. I'm Caroline Stephen. As we kick off into the new year, it's always a good idea to run over a few of the crucial aspects to trading we tend to forget, and to make sure we have a solid grounding on where we see the markets heading in 2014. Jonathan Barrett, award-winning economist and commentator, joins us to give his advice and views. Want to excel in the share markets, but you're having trouble getting off the couch? Well, Chris Tate will goad your butt into action. Chris takes us through some psychological aspects to trading. He tells us how to think about the system and, even better, how to beat it. Time is ticking. Are you always running short of time? Best-selling author Louise Bedford gives us some great advice on time management. She tells us how to avoid those nasty time leaks and how to make sure we get the most out of our day. But first up, here's the week's news with Chris Tate.
And now, Market Matters with Chris Tate.
Hi Chris, how are you going?
I'm good.
So how did the Australian dollar fare this week?
Look, last night up a little bit. Most of the week going nowhere. We're waiting upon the US as we always do because we can't possibly go anywhere unaccompanied like an adult would.
And how did gold perform this week?
In a nutshell, gold seems to be stuffed. One of the most intriguing things we have is that down here in Melbourne we have a series of ads on the radio all the time extolling the virtues of gold. And interestingly, so long as they've been on the radio, gold's been stuffed. So it's literally going nowhere at present.
Okay, so does how the market fare in January generally set the tone for the rest of the year?
Well, there is a thing in market parlance known as the January effect. Basically what it says is that so goes January, so goes the rest of the year. So if January's positive, the rest of the year tends to be positive as well. The flip side of that, though, strangely enough, is that if January is negative, it seems to have no predictive value whatsoever for the rest of the year. So we all tend to wait with bated breath to see how January manages to end itself, so we get some sort of hint at least about how the market might fare during the coming year.
What's happening with Qantas this week?
Qantas, a perfect example in how to take a global, well-respected brand and drive it into the ground. The intriguing thing about Qantas is that if you look at US airline stocks, they've been among the hottest stocks of 2013. Qantas is one of our dogs of 2013. Management have managed to take a company that was in 2008 valued at $6. In 2013, it was valued at $2 and drive it down to about 90 cents. I think it comes back to that old parlance of who the hell would own an airline? Because it seems to be an incredibly tough task. And when you have management that seems to be completely bereft of ideas as to how to fix Qantas's internal problems, when their first idea should be to sack all of themselves as opposed to everybody else, you tend to have a company that is struggling very, very badly.
Yeah, it's a shame.
And it's reflected in its price. I mean, it's struggling to get back above 90 cents.
Okay, let's leave Qantas there. With the local market in the doldrums, what can traders do to get some bang for their bucks?
The simple word is diversification, but I have to clarify here. If you speak to a financial planner or a broker who's been poorly educated, they'll tell you that being diversified is simply owning stocks that have different names. That's a very simplistic view. One of the great joys of investing and trading at present is quite simply the fact that you can trade anywhere, anytime, and you can trade anything. I've got my dealing system open at present, and it gives me, from my desktop or even my phone, access to every market in the world. And traders really have to get used to the fact that, A, they're now living in a global environment, but B, there is nothing odd or difficult about trading foreign exchange commodities, whatever, compared to trading domestic stocks.
You've been listening to Market Matters with Chris Tate on talkingtrading.com.au.
As we kick off into the new year, it's always a good idea to run over a few of the important aspects to trading that we tend to forget, and to get a good grounding on where we see the markets going in 2014. Talking with us today is Jonathan Barrett, award-winning economist and regular commentator on Sky Business News, CNBC Asia, Bloomberg TV and the ABC. Hi, Jonathan.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Jonathan, what do you think are the most important aspects to trading that we need to be reminded of?
Caroline, it's always interesting for me at the beginning of every year where I look on the last 12 months of trading, the errors I've made and the wins I've made. But I always find it's important to go over those trading rules again about money management, using stop losses, generally the methodology of my trading and the methodology that I used for my successful trades. Use those same rules that you used in the past to pick successes to reuse them again for the new trading year. So I like to go over my trading rules again at the beginning of every year, just so I've got them firmly imprinted on my mind just before I take a trade.
Fantastic. So you mentioned stop losses, money management, and what was the third one?
I guess it's really stop losses, money management, and something that I always like to think of is where should I not be if the market moves against me? And it's those levels which you can pick on your charts where you know that you shouldn't be at these areas, because if you are, then your trade is definitely wrong.
Let's go back to stop losses. Some people say that you must always use a stop loss. What do you think about that?
Look, it is a contentious area. Stop losses are designed to limit losses, help money management. But more often than not, seasoned traders would look at it and say, well, it was just a blip in the market. I've been cut out and now the trend's resumed the way I want it to go. And sometimes you're too scared to actually get back into the trade. The way I tend to look at my stops, they are trigger points in the market. They are areas where I know that I'm wrong. If the market hits these levels, then I know that for some reason the trade is wrong, I will get out of it automatically, not by way of a stop in the market, but I'll physically sell that losing position. And as I said, in my mind, that's a mark of a seasoned trader to be able to cut a losing position on himself, by himself.
All right. Let's talk about when you're looking to take a position in the market. What specific tools do you like to use?
Look, I think it's over the years, and I've been trading now for, 28 years.
Oh, is that all?
you tend to have some favourite indicators. But what I always like to do is I like to look at a chart. I like to work out the range. Once I know the highs and the lows, then I can work out where the market is trending. I then look at a simple momentum indicator to see whether or not the market has momentum in the desired direction. Once I find that, I look for chart recognition patterns on charts that I've used before that tend to work. So when I look at it, the third is the most important because that's your entry level. And I often find it's better to buy in a rising market or sell in a falling market. That way you know the trend is with you, and of course the trend is your friend.
Let's now jump into 2014. How do you think the year will shape up?
2014 hopefully will be a lot better than 2013. 2013 was a very difficult market. I'm an economist, and the markets didn't behave the way we wanted it to behave. But 2014 is starting to look quite optimistic. I'm quite positive. In fact, I'm an optimist that we're going to have a very favourable year, particularly for a lot of the commodities. So I can see, the US getting into growth. I can see China maintaining growth, Japan looking at more growth, particularly with the new form of economics in Japan, and Europe slowly starting to move. All that bodes very well for Australia, very well for Australian commodities or the primary input markets. And as a result of that, that should really help their stock market. So when I look into 2014, I'm quite positive. I can see some very good trades on the horizon, and looking forward to taking those on.
What about gold? Where do you see gold going this year?
I think I'm at the moment, and a lot of people would know me as being a perennial bull for gold.
A bullion.
Yeah. I also take the other side of the market quite a few times. But gold's interesting because we don't have inflationary pressures out there. And to me, that highlights a concern because with all the liquidity that the central banks have been ploughing into the market, we should see some price pressures to the top side. In fact, we are starting to see that already, with interest rates, particularly in the US, starting to trade higher. That gives me a sense of confidence that there is this build-up of inflation starting. And as a result of that, I think that'll favour gold. So I like gold. I like gold from a fundamental perspective. And from a technical and trading perspective, you can see that we actually have a very solid support, and that's around that 1170. So if I can see 1170 holding, then I'll see gold starting to trend to the top side. So I like the price action there.
Great. All right. And what about the Australian dollar? How do you see that trading this year?
Look, it is interesting to see Glenn Stevens, the governor, RBA governor, continually wanting the Aussie dollar to trade lower. He sees that as a means or as a mechanism to help support our export market. And it's correct, because that's exactly what will occur. I guess one of the tough things for us to consider for the Aussie is that within that weakness, people will only find that our exports will become cheaper. If our exports become cheaper, more people will buy it. And as a result of that, the Aussie will start to trend higher. I actually feel that any weakness in the Aussie will actually be looked on at a period to be bought. And I can actually see the Aussie going back to parity quarter two this year. So when you look at what's happening overseas, there's going to be a need and a demand for our primary input markets, our coals, our iron ores, etc. And as a result of that, that should help support the currency. And to the detriment of the RBA, it'll probably levitate to the top side.
Jonathan, that's great information. Thanks for your time today.
No problems at all. And happy trading.
Thanks. That was economist and commentator Jonathan Barrett. Want to know how Malcolm Bish, a member of the 2012 Trading Game Mentor Program, beat 10,000 other traders to win the ASX share market game? Then you need to grab his special report. If you're serious about your trading future, this is a must-have resource. It's only $19.95 and available from tradinggame.com.au. Pick up your copy today. Are you always running short of time? Do you get the most out of your day, or do you waste time and can't quite pinpoint where? Best-selling author and trading expert Louise Bedford joins us now to give us some advice on time management. Louise, hello and welcome.
Caroline, good to be talking to you.
How can traders not be overwhelmed with all the information about trading out there?
Look, I think a lot of it comes down to attitude. I think that one of the things that you need to do as a trader is to embrace that your needs must be put above everybody else's. And I know that goes contrary to what a lot of people believe about, being nice to others and playing with others prettily. But frankly, it's the only way to get ahead. The truth of the matter is that we do have enough time to do everything that we really, really want. It's just that we have to make sure that those things are ticked off that priority list. We often lack integrity with our own time.
What do you mean integrity with our time?
Look, I think that time management is related to personal integrity. You know, like with personal integrity, it's where you do what you say you're going to do. And that is a principle that I think is really a guiding light in my own life. There's a book actually about this called The Phenomenal Secret of Forgotten Success. It's a tough little book, and if you get a copy of it, I know you'll love it. That's the premise behind that book. Now, with time management, the thing that I feel time integrity leads me to believe is that you're honouring commitments that you've made to yourself. Now, Lee Miltier, who's an authority on time management, came out with this term initially. It's going back 15 years when I first heard the term. And I think it's a really good one. Honouring your own commitments to yourself is really a key. And it's not just in trading, it's in any part of life.
What about those situations where time just ticks away and you don't even notice what you've been doing for the last half hour? I think of it as a time leak. How do you suggest we avoid those?
Oh, isn't it the way? Actually, there's that concept called the white line phenomenon, where you're driving and you're going white line, white line, white line, and all of a sudden you're home and you think, how did I ever make it home? It's almost like a subconscious driver kicks into place. I think with time leaks, often we're focusing on things in the future. Now, women are totally apt to do this. My friend Dr. Harry Stanton tells me that 90% of the things that women are worried about are in the future, which is interesting. Unfortunately, I can relate with that. If you actually just look at what's happening here and now, instead of focusing on worries and anxieties that drain your energy, that can really help. One of the things that I just love doing is to have a focus day. Have you heard of those before?
No, I haven't. Tell us about them.
What you do is you set your family up, or your employees, or whoever you're with, you set them up to say, look, on this particular day, I'm going to have a focus day. I won't be contactable by email. I won't be able to have a phone on. It's just my day to focus on one project. You can really move mountains if you have a focus day regularly. I have a focus day once a week on a Tuesday, and it is spectacular. I don't get any phone calls. I even just flick off the internet. I know that sounds like sacrilege, but it works like a charm. And I get done the things I need to do, whether it be like a trading plan review, or learning about a new trading instrument, or maybe even for me, because I'm a mentor, talking with my people that I'm mentoring over the phone. And that's my total focus. You know, everyone has only 1,440 minutes a day, and it's how you use them that really, really counts.
What other tips can people do right now to improve on their trading?
Yeah, that is a good one. One of the things I hear people say, and not just traders, I mean just generally in life, is that I don't have time for that. You know, if you constantly say I don't have time for that, what happens is your subconscious hears that and it turns that over, and then it goes, hey, I really don't have time for that. You're actually feeding back the thing that you don't want to occur. So I'd prefer people say, it's just not a priority for me at the moment. And it's probably much more honest. I even say that with my traders. Don't tell your kids, I don't have enough money for that. We can't afford that. Say, look, it's just not a priority for me at the moment. And that is actually really good, because you're not feeding back the negativity. Some of the other things that I think work out well for people is to first of all find out where you're wasting your time. Now, if you can keep a time diary and just go, okay, you know, this is how I spent my time today, that can be a really eye-opening phenomenon. And then you can create goals. So little goals, say, okay, for the next 20 minutes, I'm going to concentrate on this one thing and not do anything else. That is an amazingly productive concept. And the other thing that you can do, I think, is a little trick that I use is whenever you set an appointment, set an end time. Make sure people know that, okay, so we've got a 2 o'clock appointment today, but then say, okay, but I will be needing to go at 2:45. Have you ever tried that, Caroline?
I don't think I have, and I tell you, I will be as soon as I leave today.
Yeah, it's a good one. It really keeps people on track and it stops all of that small talk, because sometimes it's hard to know when to stop small talk, isn't it?
Louise, they often say that a well-phrased question is a problem half solved. What sort of questions should we be asking ourselves to stay on track with time?
Oh, look, in my little office, I've got a tiny little office that I go for my focus day, my Tuesdays. I've actually got a whiteboard there. And it's got a few questions on there, and these are winners because I see them as soon as I walk in. The first one is, what is the most productive and profitable use of my time right now? Now, I find that to be a fascinating question, because you want it to not only be productive, but also to create money on the other side of that. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, when you're with your kids, you're trying to think about money, but when you're thinking about money, hey, you should be thinking about money. And I think that is a real key. And another one is what is the payoff for doing what I'm doing right now? Now, if you're looking to study and you're looking to develop your skills in a particular area, maybe you're going for an MBA, that payoff is, of course, the qualification. But a lot of the time, we're not even thinking of payoffs with our time. And I think that's just a tragedy. And perhaps the other one that my cheeky systems tester, Scott Lowther, popped up on my board, the same whiteboard, is he said KISS, which is keep it simple, stupid. Mm. So that is a good reminder for me. I tend to overcomplicate things, and to break things down into little sub-goals, I think, can really be of assistance, Caroline.
Thanks, Louise. So working with the mentorees in your program, are there any time management lessons you can share with us about them?
They have taught me so much about time management. We've actually even had time management specialists do the mentor program, and they've later become moderators for the alumni, the graduate program that we run. So it's been interesting to learn from my students just as much as they're learning from me. One of the mentorees was actually telling me what he does is he sets a stopwatch. So if he's giving himself, say, half an hour for whatever it is that he's doing, he actually sets a stopwatch and he works to time. And then after the stopwatch bleeps off, he gives himself a little reward. I actually do it as well now. And so that's really been good. Like, I give myself a little reward of getting a nice cup of tea. Now, you could probably get yourself a nice glass of red wine if it was at the right time of the day, and then get nothing else done after that. But as long as you're rewarding yourself as you go along, I think that's really important.
Louise, we'll have to wrap it up there. Thanks for your insights today. They were really inspiring. Look forward to talking with you again.
Thanks, Caroline.
Want to excel in the share markets, but you're having trouble getting off the couch? Who better than expert trader Chris Tait to get your butt into action? So, Chris, how can we be more efficient traders?
One of the great problems with life is that people are overcome by their own inertia. And by that I mean we struggle to get things done. We find all sorts of reasons not to do something, but we really only need one reason to get organized. Trading's an industry where we often get it wrong, and this is in sharp contrast to the rest of our lives, whereby we're not rewarded for getting it wrong. For example, imagine you're an anaesthetist, and you couldn't really run your practice saying, look, I admit 6 of my patients died, 2 were okay, but the other 2 went to the Olympics, they were so good afterwards. You couldn't do that. Trading, unfortunately, causes us a large number of setbacks. We get knocks, we get bumps, we get losing trades. And often these come in what's known as a cluster, so you can get 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 losing trades in a row. These quite naturally are motivation sappers. Quite naturally, you would struggle after that. Is there any
rhyme or reason to the clusters coming?
No, they're simply statistical events. It's one of those things, for example, if you have a 50-cent piece, you toss it, you've got something like a 3.25% chance of getting 5 heads in a row. It's simply a statistical aberration. They just happen. It's the way, it's a little bit like, think of it this way. You'll often hear idiot football coaches on a Friday before a match talking to the media, and they will say to the media, look, we're due for a win. Well, no, you're not really. or you'll hear it from parents who have four daughters and they're pregnant again. They say, oh, we're due to have a boy. No, you're not. The chances of having a girl are still 50%. Probability is a very, very thankless taskmaster, and it's very rigid in the way it is applied to the world. Trading's the same. If you've got a trading system that's right 40% of the time, it's quite possible to have 10 losses in a row simply as a function of the system.
Okay, so when you do get the 10 losses in the row and you might be feeling a bit dejected, a bit discouraged, what do you do?
That's a very good question. This all comes down to a matter of mindset. So it's not a practical matter per se. It's nothing to do with the system. It's all to do with you. Part of it is, the analogy I use is, think of it this way. I'm a bit of a car buff. My first car was Valiant station wagon. A fabulous car. I could take it down the surf. You could sleep in the back. You could take it to the driving with half a dozen mates. It never missed a beat. I used to refer to it as simply being too stupid to stop. And it was. It was very simple, basic engineering. You know, it handled like a wheelbarrow full of tapioca, and most of the dynamics on it were rubbish. But it never failed me. It was indestructible because it was very simple and robust. Contrast that recently with the fact that I've recently sold a very overpriced, overrated Italian car, which, if the planets were not aligned correctly, would have the entire electrical system collapse. As a trader, you want to be a Valiant station wagon. You want to be simple, robust, too stupid to stop, so that you just keep going. Part of the answer lies internally, but part of it is also that we found quite by accident, and this was not my anticipation when we started the mentor program, is that you get support from other people. Because there's no new trading mistakes. Everybody has made the same mistakes as you and gone through the same thing. Their journey's slightly different, but it's still the same. They will still suffer the same sort of slings and arrows as you do. And so you get support from others. But again, it does come back to this notion of internal motivation. We've had someone in the mentor program who did the program over a decade ago, and they're yet to place a trade.
Wow.
And when questioned as to why this is, it came about that they're yet to place a trade because they cannot deal with the notion that they might be wrong. That they simply can't, they don't have the internal resources to deal with that. They want their world to be completely ordered and for them to always be right because their ego is so invested in their decision making.
Poor guy.
It is a struggle.
What about for people who get over that initial struggle and they've got the support from other traders? How important is a trading system when you get to that stage?
The issue is that a trading system is the bedrock upon which everything is built. One of the misnomers we have about trading is that people think, you know, you'll be like the old images of the trading floor that we used to see. We no longer have trading floors here in Australia because we went electronic 25 years ago.
Because you yourself used to be on the trading floor, didn't you?
A very long time ago. You know, back in the very old-fashioned days before the internet and Google. And it's, people think you're going to be one of those people, you're going to be yelling orders and doing this and doing that, when in actual fact that's not what you do. Trading's a production line where you do the same thing in the same way every day. And it is that repetition that often catches people. They're not prepared for that grind because it is a grind as you head along. And so the system is the grind part. The system does the same thing in the same way every day. And this becomes more and more so as you become more and more mechanical. So that what happens is, your system just spits out orders and you input them and that's it. You don't do anything else.
Okay, so just to finish up now, just very briefly, if you had to say one thing to motivate somebody to get off the couch and start trading, what would you say?
The issue is, for people who are struggling, you need to take a step back and think about what you want your own life to be. There is a quote by Thoreau which says, all men lead lives of quiet desperation. One of the great things about trading is it removes you from the desperation that other people feel. Because by and large, people are not in control of their own lives. If you're working for somebody else, if you're, I'll use the term wage slave, other people control your destiny. They tell you what to do, where to go, when to do it. You have a minimal amount of autonomy within that, but you are controlled by others. As a trader, you're not. We have people who trade from boats. We have people who trade from their Winnebago traveling around Australia. We have people who sit in various odd places around the world trading because they've made that decision to do so. And it is all about deciding what you want, not what others' expectations of you are, but rather what you want.
Chris, that's fantastic. So that will get your lazy butt off the couch and into action.
Hopefully.
Chris, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, Carolyn.
That's all for the show today. I want to thank our contributors, Jonathan Barrett, Louise Bedford, and Chris Tate. Tune in next week to find out how you can avoid shooting yourself in the foot when trading. And find out some things that do work in the markets and some which just don't. I'm Caroline Stephen. Thanks for your company. See you next week.
You've been listening to talkingtrading.com.au with Caroline Stephen. Make sure you are subscribed to this website to receive the very latest market views, commentary, and expert opinion. Tune in next week as we've got a bumper show planned. Bye for now.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.